Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz, coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, the Packers-Cowboys showdown in Week 6 at Lambeau Field is another day closer. And I think one thing Packers fans want to know is, what in the world is Aaron Rodgers doing ranked 31st in the league in completion percentage? It's a strange sight. 56.1, I believe, is his completion percentage through the first four games of the season. That's almost 10 percentage points below his career average, which is in the mid-60s. And Rodgers talked about it at his locker with reporters yesterday, and as expected, he took responsibility for some of his errant throws, but also there's some blame with the receivers with the drop passes. There's a lot of blame to be shared with this issue at the moment.
Well, I thought something that you pointed out that was really interesting, and again, those Spoff stats and info, was the fact that if you take the four or five drops that might have been in that game against the Giants, if you make those catches, that's a difference of 11 percentage points. So suddenly, that shifts a lot. Now, that's asking for everything to line up 100%. Certainly, it's never going to be that clean in a game. There's always going to be some, you know, room for error. But, yeah, I mean, you and I both saw it this week in the Insider Inbox that we read. I mean, people are asking that a lot.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's one simple answer to it. I think there is a number of factors that play into that. But certainly, when you don't see those numbers where they traditionally have been for Aaron Rodgers, people immediately, you know, kind of raise their arms up. But I also would argue, in my own opinion, that, you know, four games doesn't make a season, and it's a pretty small sample size. You got to let this thing play out. So we'll see where it goes from here, but certainly it's something that I know a lot of people have been asking about.
Yeah, I agree, and I almost wonder, and again, I'm not trying to make excuses for anybody, but I almost wonder from an offensive standpoint if the bye week for the Packers came at absolutely the wrong time. They got things going against a admittedly depleted Detroit defense with some injuries and whatnot, but 31 points in the first half. They didn't quite finish a couple of drives in the second half of that game, but the offense was really getting going. And as important as the bye was for the defensive side of the ball for the Packers to get some guys healed up, when you saw some of the issues with the lack of cohesion, you know, Jordy Nelson dropping a couple of passes after he seemed to be really on the rise in terms of his comeback, it just seemed like that week off didn't really help the offense any.
I think you could talk to everybody on the offensive side of the ball, and each one of them to a man will talk about why they wish the bye week was later in the season. Jordy Nelson, I thought it was really interesting. This is before the game, was even talking about, you know, because people are like, well, you know, you get a week to rest the knee or whatever. He was like, no, I wanted to keep going.
Yeah.
The way I was feeling, the way I was playing at that point in time, he felt like every week he was making progress. So to kind of stop that momentum a little bit for a week and a half, certainly it allowed the defense to get a lot healthier. We saw the be able to get a lot of guys back on that side of the ball, and certainly that played a big role in them getting this win. But at the same time, the offense trying to find itself and establish that identity and that tempo, it definitely was not the right time for that to happen. But now you can learn from it. You have the Dallas Cowboys coming into town, a quick turnaround to the Chicago Bears. You can put some nice performances together here. That thing gets forgotten about quickly.
Yeah, and Mike McCarthy got a little bit defensive in his press conference on Wednesday, being asked about some of the issues on offense. And you know, let's not forget, the offense put up 406 yards. That's the most yardage they've had in a game this season. Now, it didn't translate into enough points. I think that's the issue. 23 points on 400 yards isn't good enough. A turnover in the red zone,
right.
A couple of other red zone possessions that ended in field goals. Richard Rodgers had a chance to catch a touchdown pass, a tough catch, but a catchable ball there in the end zone in the second half. So I feel like we're in the same place as we were after the Minnesota game, where the signs are there, it's close. Then we saw it come together against the Lions, and now they took a little bit of a step back in terms of that consistent, steady execution.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that I think it really did come down to execution, because the fact you look at how that game played out. I mean, the offensive line played incredibly well against that defensive front and those edge rushers from the Giants.
Yeah, and they had a path completely cleared for James Starks for a touchdown on that screen pass. And whether it was Starks' footwork was a little off or the pass was a little off, I think both guys have taken responsibility for that. But that's a touchdown, 9 times out of 10, and it was just inches away, whatever you want to say, from clicking just right.
Right, and the thing I argued, too, in one of the stories we wrote this week is that I guess, for me personally, I'd be a lot more concerned if you were seeing like a 5 or 6 interception game out of Aaron Rodgers, something completely uncharacteristic. We saw a lot of the throws that he's great at getting out of his hands in that game against the Giants.
Yeah.
I mean, there were quite a few where he threaded the needle. I think of that pass to Davante Adams that was kind of off a little bit of a slant route between two defenders, ended up going for like 17, 20 yards, something like that.
Okay.
You saw a number of different plays in this game that I thought, okay, that's vintage Aaron Rodgers. It's just a matter of being able to keep that tempo going, being able to get points on the board, because I still wonder if the Randall Cobb play ends up being a touchdown, or if you end up, you know, the certain things fall in different directions. If this ends up being a 35-16 game or something like that, how many people are raising questions about it? But
right.
Certainly it was a 1-score ball game, and that's for some people that's not good enough. So we'll see where it goes from here. But, I mean, I still think there's a lot of potential in this offense to break out.
Yeah, for sure. Well, from a veteran quarterback to a rookie quarterback, there's a new guy coming to town for the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday, and we'll talk more about that after this. Back with more on Packers Unscripted. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, turning our attention to the quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys, rookie Dak Prescott, 4th-round draft pick out of Mississippi State, took over the starting job, not only with Tony Romo having the back injury, but Dallas's original number 2 in Kellen Moore also getting injured back during the during training camp. And if there's one thing statistically that stands out about Prescott is that he's 5 games into his NFL career, 155 pass attempts,
yeah,
and he has yet to throw an interception, which is a record for a rookie, and he's only, I believe, it's 7 passes away from Tom Brady's record of 162 to start a career. For Brady, that 162 spanned his rookie season and the beginning of his second season in the NFL. A remarkable statistic, and certainly the Packers are going to try to get that first pick against him.
Well, and what's really interesting about that stat, when the first time I heard it, it was, one, incredible for Prescott to be off to that kind of start, to put himself in that kind of company, but two, it's so long ago now that this ride began for Tom Brady, you kind of forget like how he sort of jumped on the scene too in a very similar way, and
yeah,
in which being thrown into that situation and then suddenly was a star within a year. So
yeah,
for Prescott, that's certainly good company to be in. I really like what the Cowboys have done with him. They haven't asked him to be this, you know, 300 yard per game type quarterback. He's a rookie. They understand his limitations. There's ability there that they really like, but they haven't asked him to win, quote unquote, like a lot of games for him. They've asked,
yep,
him to manage this offense and to be a guy that protects the football. He's done all of that, and he kind of has an X factor too, with the scrambling ability and being able to move out of the pocket and extend plays. All those things, I think, have bode very well for him in this start, and certainly when you have Ezekiel Elliott, you don't have Tony Romo, you want to feed the run game. The same thing the Packers did in 2013 when they didn't have Aaron Rodgers, and Prescott's been up to that.
Yeah, I think there's maybe no better best friend to a rookie quarterback than having the number one rushing offense,
yeah,
in the league and the number one running back in the league in Ezekiel Elliott. Certainly, Prescott's statistics are impressive. You know, the fantasy owners may not like the fact that he's only got 4 touchdown passes.
Right.
He's only thrown for more than 250 yards, I believe, once in the 5 games. But when you combine the read option ability, as you said, the scrambling ability, making plays when things break down, and the fact that he's protecting the ball the way he is, this is the Cowboys couldn't be more pleased with where they are given what happened with Tony Romo during the preseason.
Yeah, definitely, and some too. I mean, and we'll talk about this later in the show, but I mean, when you have that offensive line, it's you want to talk about the running game being a big benefit, to have that line in front of him as well. There isn't a whole lot of jailbreaks going on. I mean, he's getting time to maneuver, to make plays happen. And certainly, you know, Cole Beasley's become his best friend, it seems like, in terms,
yep,
of utilizing that slot receiver. We've seen Jason Witten do what Jason Witten's always done in terms of his productivity.
Yeah, that guy just never seems to slow down. His game doesn't change. It's like he's the same guy every year. He gets the job done.
Absolutely. And we saw, over the years, him and Romo have built up a big chemistry, but be able to carry that on too. I just see an offense with a lot of budding weapons. And you and I talked about yesterday, I think, some of the questions there defensively and how their approach is, how much they're going to be able to pressure the quarterback. But with all the resources that Jerry Jones and the Cowboys have invested in the offensive side of the ball, this is what you've wanted to see. And certainly now coming into Lambeau Field, I think, we talk about Green Bay and seeing this top-ranked rushing offense and the challenge that presents. I think this is also a big challenge for the Cowboys, too. I think this is probably the best team that they've faced so far in their schedule. And you only can play the guys in front of you. You can only beat the teams that are on the schedule. But I think this is going to be a big challenge for them as well, coming into Lambeau Field and hoping to continue that success.
Yeah, I agree with you. And let's not discount the pressure cooker that Prescott was thrown into here. This isn't just the Dallas Cowboys and their fan base and everything. This is a team. In 2014, they were a playoff team. They felt they should have won the game at Lambeau Field on the Dez Bryant non-catch, that whole thing. They come back in 2015 with all kinds of hopes and expectations. Right. Tony Romo gets injured early in the year, and they go 1-11 in games without Tony Romo. 1-11. So then when Tony Romo gets injured again in the preseason in 2016, you talk about a sky is falling type of situation as far as the perception and where the fans were. And this kid stepped right into the fire and has done everything they could have asked for him. And this matchup, the Packers not quite being offensively where they want to be yet, and the Cowboys off to the fast start that they are with this running game and the Packers' number one rushing defense. There's so much to like about this matchup on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, it's really intriguing, Mike, and especially when you talk about rookie quarterbacks. Mike McCarthy was asked about this yesterday, too, about why it seems like more young guys have been able to come into this league and make an impact right away. He didn't really put it on one specific area, but I thought one of the interesting things that he said is when you have that system and you know who that coach is, it isn't entirely a surprise to see a young guy be able to come in and manage it. I mean, Jason Garrett is an incredibly accomplished quarterback and quarterback's coach, and Scott Linehan and the offense that they have set up.
Yeah.
It's conditioned for this, and really that was the issue last year is they couldn't protect the football. This year they have a young man that's done just that.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Well, we've got more to talk about this Week 6 Green Bay-Dallas matchup coming up. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, I wanted to touch on a Packers player. We've talked about him a lot already, but you wrote another nice feature story on our website on Wednesday evening about him, Nick Perry. You talk about a guy who it's all really starting to come together for him. And we talked about how you hate to be the guy who's doing the projections at the one quarter right. mark of the season, but 4.5 sacks through four games, you multiply that by four for 16 games, that's 18 sacks. That's more than Reggie White or Clay Matthews has ever had in a Green Bay Packer uniform in 1 year. Now, we don't know if he's going to get to that, obviously, but there is so much to like about where Nick Perry is right now and what he's doing for this defense.
There is, Mike, and I being able to chat with him a little bit this week, Perry's always been a really humble and nice individual to speak with.
He's a
quiet guy, but he's never really copped an attitude at all at any point during his career, even during the down moments. He's always just sort of been steady. But the one thing I've noticed this year with him having some of the success and not having to talk about the injuries, is you've really seen him sort of come out, I don't want to say come out of his shell more, but he's been a little bit more outspoken. And I found it really interesting. It was something that we wrote about on the website, just talking about what his mentality's been like throughout this whole journey of his and through the injuries and the ups and downs. The one thing he said is that his confidence never was affected through this. He always felt every time he stepped on the field, he had a chance to be unstoppable in that given game. Sometimes we saw it. I think back to 2013 at the Baltimore Ravens game when Clay Matthews broke his thumb for the first time, I believe, or he was missing that game. And he has two sacks, but then suffers a foot injury in that game.
Yep.
Perry did. He's had these glimpses of really strong play, Now with finally being healthy, we're seeing that a little bit more, and he's really had an opportunity to come out and show what he can do. Yeah, there's been some bad luck and there's been some misfortune, but right now he's in a good place, and he's being a really productive player, not only in this defense, but in this league.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting too, where he talked about how his confidence has never wavered, and maybe what we're seeing now is that because the results are there on the field, he's able to show that confidence a little more outwardly. I mean, he's not going to stand there at his locker when he's going, you know, dealing with all these injuries back and forth and the production is not there. He's not going to stand there at his locker and say he's confident he can set the world on fire. He's smart enough to know that's not the way to go about it. He kept his head down, kept plugging away at the rehab and getting himself healthy, and now we're seeing it. I think the other thing that we're seeing, too, is he's a much more complete player than he was, and maybe it took a little longer to get there because of all the time that he missed because of injuries, but you and I have talked about this before. Early on in his career, it seemed like he was basically a bull rusher off of the edge. He didn't do much but try to just overpower the offensive tackle or the tight end or whoever was trying to block him. He seems to have much more variety to his pass rush moves. You don't get 4.5 sacks in 4 games, and he had multiple sacks in the playoffs last year. You don't get that by just doing one thing against the offensive tackle all the time. He's really developing into a more complete guy.
Yeah, and it's actually that power even works for him in different ways too. You think back to that sack he had against the Giants and Ereck Flowers. Flowers kind of ducked his head a little bit and sort of braced for impact. Well, Perry just put his hand up, swatted his helmet down, and went around the outside.
Went around him. Yep.
I mean, and those are the kind of things that you see, and I think that's him being more comfortable in that 3-4 outside linebacker role. I thought it really showed a lot about Perry that, you know, he didn't tuck tail after last season and decide, you know what, I'm an unrestricted free agent. I'm going to go find a 4-3 defense, and I'm going to go back to being a defensive end. No.
Yeah.
He completed this conversion to a 3-4 outside linebacker. I think he can probably do either. But the fact that he was willing to stick with it and stick with the process that was in place in Green Bay and come back and say, you know what, I'm healthy, I'm going to bet on myself to be able to finally show what I can do, I thought that said a lot about him and his character. And now we're finally seeing it, and the Packers' defense is benefiting from it. You have a multi-headed monster now developing with Matthews, Peppers, Nick Perry, Dayton Jones. You even saw Kyler Fackrell and Jaron Elliott getting involved
absolutely
at the end of the first half on Sunday. So there, you hope for Perry's sake that he can stay healthy and really become the player that everybody knows he can be. But certainly when you get off to a start like this, he's already set a career high with 4.5 sacks through only 4 games.
Right.
That there's a lot ahead of, for him this season.
Yeah, he's always been a solid set-the-edge guy against the run, and just the rest of his game is all coming around with the steady playing time, being able to be out there all the time. So before we go to a break, Wes, we'll take care of some sponsor business. Picture this. You and a friend are sitting VIP in plush leather recliners watching the Packers on the 50-yard line at Lambeau Field. Nice picture, isn't it? Well, if you enter Cousin Subs' Best Seats in the House promotion, you and a guest could win a chance to kick back on the 50-yard line in style. Two pairs of lucky Packers fans will be chosen prior to each home game for this VIP experience. Enter daily now through December 12 by completing the entry form and submitting. For complete rules and eligibility, go to packers.com/bestseats. Cousin Subs, we believe in better. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, final segment. You touched on it earlier in the show, the Dallas Cowboys offensive line. You talk about a place, a unit in which a team has invested tremendous draft resources, draft capital to rebuild that unit from where they were a handful of years ago. The Dallas Cowboys have built their team and brought their team back to prominence on the backs of that offensive line.
They certainly have, and I mean, Tyron Smith, their left tackle, a first-round caliber player, now a 3-time Pro Bowler, 3-time All-Pro, an incredible player, what is considered to be one of the top left tackles in the NFL. He'll certainly be a challenge. Nick Perry talked about him earlier this week and the, you know, the difficulties he presents. But the thing that really strikes me about this offensive line for the Cowboys, you're not going to see, it doesn't sound like we'll see Lael Collins this Sunday, but Collins, Travis Frederick from Wisconsin, and Zach Martin, three guys that were all first-round caliber talents. in the interior line. You don't see that a lot. That tends to be a position where you see more mid-round, late-round type guys. The Cowboys made it a point that they were going to put resources into that position. Martin now arguably the best guard, you know, in the NFL, or at least in that conversation. And Doug Free from Manitowoc, a pretty solid right tackle as well. So
yeah, and Free's been around for a while.
Yeah,
you know.
And it's just a really deep group, and even with Collins being down, I mean, Ronald Leary was their starting left guard before. So it's just incredible how deep they go, what it allows them to do, not only in the pass, but also with the run game. And certainly it's a position that they've really dedicated, as you said, a lot of resources to, and kind of fixated on that and pointed that out, that this is going to be where we build our offense. And certainly, every year it just continues to get better, it seems like.
Yeah, and this being the number one rushing offense in the league right now is nothing new to this group. I mean, 2 years ago in 2014 with DeMarco Murray,
right,
they were the best rushing offense in the league at that point. At least I'm pretty sure they were number one,
right,
in the league that year as well. So they've really built around this unit. The Packers have gone about it a different way. Only
right.
One first round draft pick in Brian Bulaga. You know, as we talked about, David Bakhtiari, T.J. Lang, J.C. Treader, all fourth-round picks. Corey Linsley, a fifth-round pick. Lane Taylor right now at guard is an undrafted guy. So there's more than one way to skin a cat, as they say. But two really, really darn good offensive lines are going to be on the field at Lambeau Sunday.
Yeah, and, you know, in the offensive line for the Packers, they're not looking at any comparisons or anything like that. But I think the thing that's special about Green Bay is how they've built it. And they've built one of the best lines in football in not – invested those resources. Either way, it can work out, as
yep.
we've seen. But I thought the commitment that they've shown to these mid-round guys and how they've developed guys has really played well into this offense.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it should be a fun one to watch on Sunday. It's getting closer, Wes.
Yeah.
We're almost there. But we'll call that a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the Team account. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.